From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. We have a really cool episode for you today that I'm excited to share with everyone. Those of you who follow our podcast know that we talk a lot about North Korea, especially lately with all their provocations. But this week we'll be talking about North Korea from a really interesting and different angle, seismology. Our guest today is Dr. In-seol Choi, who is an assistant professor with the Center for Earthquake Research and Information at the University of Memphis. He was part of a team of researchers who recently published an article in Nature about the possibility that North Korea's nuclear tests could trigger an eruption of Mount Baekdu, a volcano located on the border of North Korea and China. I recently sat down with Dr. Choi via Skype to discuss this research and learn a little bit more about Mount Baekdu and what could happen if these nuclear tests do indeed trigger an eruption. So let's get right into it. Dr. Choi, thanks for joining us today. Can you begin by giving us an idea of your background, how you got involved with CERI and what CERI does?
Sure. CERI was first established in 1977 as the Tennessee Earthquake Information Center, and then expanded to current CERI, Center for Earthquake Research and Information, according to the Center of Excellence mandate of the state to build an earthquake research program to a level of international scope and reputation. So we are keeping a close eye on areas with a high earthquake activity throughout the world using the most advanced technologies. So we all know that earthquakes are destructive, mysterious, and scary. So our goal is to better understand them and put the hazards in perspective. I myself is a computational geodynamicist. So I joined CERI 3 years ago, hoping to contribute to comprehensively understanding the connection between deep earth processes and the regional earthquakes. So I'm originally from South Korea, and I got my bachelor's degree in geology there. So it would make sense why I got interested in this study when Dr. Hong at Yonsei University told me about it.
Right. So where did the original idea come from? You said Dr. Hong had the idea to do this research. You know, how did he or how did the researchers, I guess, as a whole, decide to focus on Mount Baekdu?
Unfortunately, I cannot say much about it. Certainly, Dr. Hong came up with that idea and approached me because we wanted to use computational methods to verify his estimation of this stress change, which I'll have a chance to talk about more later. So he studied the idea. But in general, South Koreans had always have a concern that what's going to happen when the Mount Baekdu erupts.
Right, so that was something that I was interested about because I know a lot of our listeners have heard about Mount Baekdu. You know, a lot of times they've heard about it in a political sense. You know, it's on the border between China and North Korea.
Right.
People hear about it in relation to North Korea, but related to politics, I guess. So can you give us a brief introduction to Mount Baekdu as a mountain? And, you know, when was the last time it erupted? How destructive was it?
Sure. So South Koreans have a good reason to worry about this possible eruption of Mount Baekdu because Mount Baekdu showed a period of increased activity from 2002 to 2006. So by increased activity, I mean the frequency and magnitude of earthquakes around Baekdu volcano increased during that period. So although the level of activity has decreased back to the background level, nothing guarantees that the volcano wouldn't erupt in the near future. So if you look at the eruption of Eyjafjallajökull volcano in Iceland that erupted in 2010, we can see that it also had a period of increased activity before the eruption. And the active period came 10 years earlier than the actual eruptions. So now you add the disturbance by seismic waves generated by nuclear tests. So anyone would be at least curious what such disturbance would do to a volcano that might be already semi-active. And so to tell you a little more about the back to volcano, many active volcanoes are geographically associated with so-called subduction zones. So in plate tectonics, which is the prevailing paradigm in earth science, the earth's surface is split into a dozen of plates, and they are all moving relative to each other, slowly but constantly. So one of the possible types of relative motions is the sinking of one plate under another. So we call that process subduction, and the boundary of those two plates is called subduction zone. So there is a complicated process going on when one plate is sinking, but it's usually causes melting in the overlying mantle, and that magma generated by melting will try to rise up through the overriding plate, and that forms volcanoes. So the ring of fire along the rim of the Pacific Ocean is a good example. But back to volcano is an oddball. It does not form according to that usual process. It's basically too far from any subduction zone. So the closest one is at the Japan Trench, where the Pacific plate and the Philippine Sea plate are subducting under Eurasia. So, but it's more than 1,000 kilometers away. So the typical subductions of volcanoes are within several hundreds of kilometers from Trench. So there are some hypotheses, but none is more strongly supported than others. So back to volcano started eruption about 23 million years ago. Back then, the eruptions were not that explosive, but the explosive one just started about 20,000 years ago, and it's still continuing. So there is one big eruption that was around 1000 AD. It spewed out more than 100 cubic kilometers of rhyolites. So probably doesn't make much sense to the audience, but so there is a volcanic explosivity index that starts from zero, that means the smallest volume of erupted material, to the highest scale seven. And people believe that that millennium eruption was the scale seven. So Mount St. Helens eruption in 1980 was that index five.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we have all the reasons to worry about that. So although all the subsequent eruptions were of smaller magnitudes, but if a similarly strong eruption occurs, then of course it can be a global scale disaster.
Wow, so I didn't realize it was that huge.
Yeah.
It could be a major issue.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get to your article, which was really interesting. Basically, you found that some of the nuclear testing and activity that North Korea has been doing recently could trigger an eruption of Mount Baekdu. How so?
Yeah, so we know that pressure or in general stress changes in magma chamber can trigger a process called bubbling, in which gases are separated from the other phases in magma. So we believe that that is the first step of the eruption. So we looked at how much of stresses can change in back to volcano's magma chamber by seismic waves generated by explosions, especially if that explosions occur at the location estimated for that North Korean nuclear tests. Since the nature of the explosion wouldn't change, but if they continue to the experiments at the same location with different magnitude, then we can use a technique called empirical Green's function. So in this technique, we basically scale up the recorded seismic waveforms from previous tests to a certain unknown magnitude event. So the previous tests had magnitudes from 4 to 5. And we looked at the possible stress changes due to magnitude 6 and 7. It turned out that magnitude 7 explosion would likely cause 0.1 megapascal of stress changes, depending on the texture of the rhyolitic magma. This value can be too low or close enough for triggering bubbling. So according to existing experiments, on the similar types of magma. So when there are tiny little mineral grains in the magma, then they can be sites for very efficient bubble formation. So less than one megapascal might be sufficient for starting bubbling. So our estimation for magnitude 7 is approaching this value. But without such texture, however, much greater stress change would be required. So on the order of about tens of megapascals, so much greater than our estimation.
Okay. That's a really good explanation for our listeners who don't necessarily understand the science of what's going on here.
Thank you.
Did you also look at the potential consequences if that disruption does cause an eruption? Did you do any modeling there?
So I think this is something other experts should take a look. So basically, we haven't considered any consequences yet. But I'd just like to remind you of the chaos the Ayia-Flyer-Yokohama eruption caused in 2010. And that event was only VEI index 24. And the fact that the Millennium eruption left 5 centimeter thick volcanic ash in northern Japan. So just imagine what kind of materials this eruption can cause.
Yeah, that would be pretty bad.
Yes.
So obviously there are a lot of special issues doing a research project that relates to North Korea. You can't just, you know, decide to study this mountain, buy a plane ticket, and, you know, go do it. So how did you get around the political situation? Were you able to get access to the mountain? Did you need access to the mountain to do this research?
Fortunately, we didn't have to this time. If we need to, we can still access Mount Baekdu from China. But we could get all the data we used in this study without actually visiting the volcano.
Okay, so you didn't have to worry about the political situation
right,
too
not
much.
At this time.
Yeah. However, you also could not get, I assume you couldn't get access to any of the nuclear facilities, so you had to kind of estimate some of that data as well, right?
Yes.
So how do you account for the fact that we don't really have direct information about some of these events in North Korea?
So thanks to global networks of sensitive seismometers, the location and magnitude of nuclear tests can be remotely determined. So with reliable accuracy. So for now, we don't need to worry about getting around the political situation to get access to a nuclear facility. So I don't have any solution to that. Who knows, in the future I might need to, but right now the only way to get data is to use the published data from the Chinese scholars, but there's no clear solution to that political limitations.
What has been the response to this paper so far? Do you think this issue will or should be taken into consideration when countries continue to try to work on this issue with North Korea?
As far as I know, there haven't been immediate responses yet. This interview is actually one of the quote-unquote early responses we got. Usually it takes time to get responses to an academic work. So we'll wait and see. But clearly, to be able to say more about the possibility of a triggered eruption of Mount Baekdu, we'll need more data and detailed on-site survey and monitoring. So we hope this study can be a justification or motivation for continuing research efforts in the surrounding countries.
Okay, so those are all the questions I had about your research. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. I hope you all were able to learn something new about North Korea and get to know North Korea from a different perspective here this week. KEI staff, myself included, are actually at the International Studies Association Conference this week, so be sure to go on our website, keia.org, to check out some of our live streams of panels there, and you can always go back and watch the videos afterwards as well. As always, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, and we'll see you back here again next week for another great episode.